So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On the show this week, it's the annual media reaction survey from Kantar. Jane Osler's here to unpack the findings. Mark Thompson is taking over at CNN, but after taking on the top job at the BBC and New York Times, is this his toughest challenge yet? Also on the programme, how some enterprising souls might be using Spotify to launder money, and why Facebook's hitting closed tab on Facebook News. All that plus in the media quiz, we look at the winners and losers at the National TV Awards. That's all to come in this edition of the Media Podcast. In the news this week, as Warner Brothers Discovery announces that the writers and actors strike will cost it $500 million this year, five talk show hosts have combined forces to pay their workers through a new podcast. Strike Force 5 features Stephen Colbert, John Oliver, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, and Seth Meyers. But in this humble podcaster's opinion, they could do with spending a little more money on their recording software. Elsewhere, many column inches have been written this week about the closure of CITV, ITV's linear children's channel. But the generations that will miss it most, i.e. Gen Z, will be satiated by the news Big Brother will premiere on ITV, on the main channel. And new Love Island spin-off All Stars is coming to ITV2. Who says linear's dead? Now, joining me from the London podcast studios, making her first in-studio media podcast debut, it's Talented People's Kimberly Godbolt. Hello.
Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's lovely to see you here.
Thanks for having me.
So we've been talking a lot on the show about kind of like the slowdown in TV commissioning. And at the TV festival a couple of weeks ago, it was definitely the hot topic, wasn't it? Just this change in commissioning. I mean, what's the effect on some of the people that you look after or kind of come through your doors?
It's absolutely massive. It is all anyone can talk about. It is all we hear about. We obviously sit right in the middle between all the production companies and channels and streamers who are, you know, looking to us when they have roles to give us to work on, and then all of the thousands and thousands of freelancers who are desperately looking for work. So we are really sensitive to even a fine market difference, and this is absolutely huge. It's been really, really hard for everyone, and I know that's been said a lot, but it is true. It hasn't got a lot better, and you know, to the point where even just, you know, just in the last 24 hours, there's been a post on Reddit where someone is writing a letter to telly to hand in their resignation,
right.
Which is one of, sadly, many that we already know about. But
we've got to work, haven't you? You've got to do something if you can't find a gig.
You have. And, you know, people are leaving. I think also people are fairly annoyed with the senior people who are sitting in cushy staff jobs, telling them just to hold their nerve. I think that's patronising now, because, as you say, people have got to pay mortgage, rent, bills, etc., and live. And with the cost of living going up, it's an absolute nightmare for people. So there's only so much, well, you know, you need to use this time to upskill yourself, or you need to use this time to wisely make yourself better at something that people want to hear, even though that is kind of the best that people can do at the moment. But there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of upset because after COVID, and people got back up again, loads of people were, you know, production managers, for example, were like back in their droves. We love you. You know, you can charge any rate you like. We need you. All this love. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're kicked from, you know, kicked at the knees again and back on the ground.
Are there any sort of genres that are coming back quicker, or that there's any idea from? Because a lot of kind of factual sort of disappeared. Is there any kind of good signs, or is it still a little bit too early?
I mean, I think we are sensing September, October, there will be a little commissioning bump in certain unscripted genres, like there usually is, just because commissioners have been away. Stuff still needs to be on the telly.
Yes.
And so there will be bits and bobs that have been in development for a long time. So, yeah, I'd say, you know, some big formats and factent stuff is, you know, is prickling and may come through. But on the whole, everyone's saying it's kind of next year it's going to come back, you know, properly.
And you set up a podcast kind of precisely for this community of people.
Yes. So the Imposter Club is a place for people to come and hang out and listen to very senior people talk about their own struggles and challenges in the industry, because there's this overwhelming sense of loneliness, that the freelance community are just not looked after and have nowhere to go and nowhere to turn. And that it's so easy to compare yourself to others and look around and go, how has that person got there so successfully and easily? And then feel, but I am totally left out from this and I must be terrible at my job, and have these imposter syndrome moments. So, yeah, it's a place where some very senior names have come and talked incredibly candidly about their careers and the things that they faced. It's for other people to kind of listen in and feel better about themselves, but also learn how to handle the difficulties.
So more on that later, and also all the details are in the show notes. And next to Kimberly, we've got the EVP of Global Thought Leadership for Kantar. It's Jane Osler. Hi, Jane.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. So we're going to talk about your media reactions research a little bit later on. But come on, before we start, give us one wow statistic. What's the thing that surprised you when you were going through the cross tabs?
I think, yeah, obviously a lot of time spent looking at the data this year. Surprising thing was probably that the number one channel for consumers in terms of where they like marketing activity and advertising is actually sponsored events.
Okay.
And in fact, the top five preferences among consumers are all out-of-home channels, like out, you know, posters, digital out of home, cinema ads and point of sale. So while consumers love all that, the top five for marketers are all digital channels where they accept advertising. So you've got this complete mismatch, literally in the top five.
Marketers not in tune with consumers? That's never happened before, has it?
Anyway, it's outrageous.
We'll get more into that a bit later on. First though, story number one. A big story has been the news that Mark Thompson, previously of the BBC and the New York Times, is taking over at CNN. A surprise to many, though everybody's kind of written about it, has said, well, this is quite obvious, isn't it? I hadn't seen anybody mention this before. And you can see why they chose him. Jane, why do you think Mark Thompson's decided to put his head above the parapet at CNN?
Well, obviously, he's been in many challenging roles before, and he's been in many roles where the job is to bring forward a kind of legacy organisation and drag them kicking and screaming into a digital world.
Whether they want to go or not.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, there are obviously particular circumstances at CNN where they've had, you know, a period with a CEO who, like, did not do the right things.
Yes.
Who left under a bit of a cloud, tried to drag them to be more right wing, had a bit of a rebellion, a mutiny almost from some of the people who work there. So, like, it's a problem. It's a problem. And, you know, from what I know, Mark Thompson is good at sorting that kind of thing out. I think the other thing is, you know, all CEO roles now, they have to be like really good on the strategy, but they also have to be really good on the execution. And possibly in a new dimension, which is they also have to be really good at people.
Yes.
And that's diametrically opposed to perhaps, you know, old, and also old school CEO profiles. Mm. So it strikes me that Mark Thompson has obviously all the attributes to do this. And he's obviously also got the interest in doing a really difficult job at the age of 66, which I think is brilliant. And, you know, if companies make mistakes in hiring the wrong CEO, it can set an organisation back, not by months, but by years, in a crucial time.
Absolutely. I mean, Kimberly, the kind of the team at CNN have been sort of stuck with all of these changes. We had Warner Brothers Discovery buying it off of AT&T, so uncertainty about the ownership. Then they had Chris Licht, who was an interesting choice, and everyone was generally relatively positive when he started, but it went downhill very quickly. A bit of concern, like a Warner Brothers directing some stuff, with some stuff coming from Chris Licht, and they're stuck in the middle. I mean, is staff relations high up Mark's list, or is he going to be looking at other things?
Oh, absolutely. I was going to say as well, I feel like with my headhunting hat on, I absolutely would have approached him about this role. I think he's an absolute dream for them. And from what we know, his leadership skills are brilliant. And he's said that he's going to spend the first couple of months listening and learning and, you know, not just, you know, gunning whatever he thinks they should do straight off the bat. So I think that will be music to the team's ears. I mean, he's had his fair share of ups and downs, but I think, you know, with CNN being described as a legacy media brand but with a messy digital strategy, I think seeing as he was credited with the iPlayer before even Netflix, I think he's got, you know, a really brilliant chance of helping everyone discover what it is again. I mean, I don't even really have a sense of what CNN is or wants to be anyway. For me, it's just a news. That's a ridiculous word to use, but it's a news channel that feels quite dry with these allegations of bias. So what does it want to be? Does it want to be making more premium content? And, you know, I'm sure he can nail that strategy, as Jane said.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of challenges for the brand. It's got an amazing brand. Everyone knows what it is. CNN.com is one of the biggest websites in the world and never really gets talked about. Everyone obviously obsessed, particularly in America, with the domestic TV channel and who's on primetime to kind of hundreds of thousands of listeners. I mean, the ratings for all cable news channels are quite small in the States. So maybe do you think his focus perhaps might not be broadcast, which is what everyone's obsessed with?
Well, everyone is obsessed with broadcast, but also, as everybody knows, on the other side of the fence, you also have the challenge of how do you get your digital revenues to match your costs in an increasingly digital world. And Mark had, you know, huge success at the New York Times in, you know, developing the subscription offer, making that profitable, making that one of the only successful subscription operations globally. And so he's got very good form in that regard. So understanding, you know, advertiser revenue and the changes that are going on there is really important for him.
A big challenge for CNN is all of their money comes from cable TV subscriptions, which basically cable companies have to pay CNN at a certain price per subscriber, whether they watch or not. Same for Fox News and MSNBC. Mm. So you've got this huge amount of cash that comes in, sort of unconnected to your product.
Yes, exactly. And also the questions are, is that you know, revenue reliable in a kind of general era of perhaps declining viewing among some audiences? So I think that the challenge really will be to, you know, is what I said before, dragging them into a digital age and maintaining revenues and growing the digital ones will be a priority, I'm sure.
I mean, I have just such respect for the guy. I mean, who would take that on in their 60s? And if he's going to do anything close to his, you know, acquiring Wordle when he was at the New York Times, I mean, we've got, you know, exciting things in store for CNN.
Also, apparently he can cook, you know. Like, he's multi-talented, good with people and a cook. So, like, what's not to like, really?
Well, I'm sure we will keep up to date with what Mark's doing. I think he was in at CNN on Tuesday this week, so he's already in and he starts next month. Okay, on to Facebook, and sticking with news, Meta has closed the tab on what Facebook News, and whilst news stories are going to be still available, of course, in people's feeds, the tech giant's no longer going to pay UK news outlets for featuring their stories. Jane, how is this going to affect people? What were they doing and where are they now?
Well, you know, the introduction of the separate tab for news was I guess, a risk that Meta took on the Facebook app to presumably try and separate the commercial realities of the news and the consumer content, but also from a user experience point of view to try and encourage more people to post their own social content in perhaps a time when they were stopping doing that so much. And I think, you know, that the news battles have been going on for quite a long time in regards to who pays who for news. There was a bit of a standoff in Australia a few years ago about that.
Because there's a view that Facebook has basically stolen all the money from news websites. Whether this is entirely true, but the news organisations definitely feel like all their cash has been stolen. I mean, were these investments to news companies sort of money to just stay quiet and just...
I think, you know, they were probably done under duress, you know, because they had to, because there was a bit of an industry standoff. But, you know, the fact is we all get our news from other places now as well. We go to X or we go to other, you know, original media brands and look at our news. Facebook isn't necessarily the place you would naturally go to for news. So I think it's not only a sort of strategic and a revenue decision, but it's also it's presumably just less hassle for them.
Do you think, Kimberly, do you think the big tech companies, Google and Facebook, should have to kind of pay a news tax, and that, you know, they're taking a load of advertising money that comes from attention? If you want good stuff for your news and insight and investigations, they're the ones that should pay for it.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, so people expect so much for free, don't they? And it is getting harder to figure out what news is reliable and trustworthy. So I mean, personally, I can't say I would miss the news tab on Facebook. But it is it's a grey area about who should pay for it all. And I mean, I know people are cross because Meta, Facebook used to say that, you know, local newspapers and using these journalists in the field are the lifeblood of communities. And that's, we want that organic content from the ground. And now they've just pulled it. But I also don't think it's a terrible decision either. And everyone's got to cut costs and it will make people more entrepreneurial.
I mean, so this is also, this is the closure of their community news project. NewsQuest, who a participant told Press Gazette this week, this is a cynical move from a company that takes billions of pounds from the UK advertising market and built their Facebook platform in part by free riding the quality content that news publishers provide. I mean, also there's been some issues in Canada who've tried to ape the Australian model, and they've pulled all news from Facebook, haven't they? They've gone, okay, if that, we're not going to play by those rules. The government have added some new laws in to force them to do something, so they've pulled news from the platform.
Yeah, so it's a battleground, really, isn't it? And who knows where this will stop. But I think it's also something that speaks to, you know, what is Facebook's positioning? What is Facebook the app for now? There are various experiments that they've undertaken.
Do you think it shows more confidence from Facebook? Because, I mean, they've kind of been through the mill a bit, sort of post-election and Trump and bias and Cambridge Analytica and everything. Actually, do they feel a bit more confident they don't need to pay off the news publishers anymore?
That's a possibility. And I also think it is, you know, as Kimberly's saying, it's a question of focus. You know, why keep going down one route when it causes you nothing but hassle, you know, public communication issues and, you know, possibly reputationally damaging problems as well. So maybe it's, you know, it's just simpler without it.
People don't really know what Facebook is for anymore. You're bang on. You know, and hardly any of the younger generation that most people are trying to market advertise to use it. So I have no idea where it's going.
But it's still a hugely popular channel for advertising because it still gets big reach.
Yes.
You know, so there's a mismatch there. You know,
they're also doing well. They're also a multi-product firm. You've got Instagram for the younger end. You've got WhatsApp, Threads, and they call Facebook Blue, I think, internally, you know, the big blue app, and what kind of goes where. Sticking to news, and Deadline reports that the BBC is keeping its options open when it comes to general election coverage in the wake of the Hugh Edwards scandal. So Hugh Edwards would normally present the election. He is unwell at the moment, so if there was a snap election tomorrow, he probably wouldn't be around for it. Even as we go into next year, is he going to be around? Is he going to be employed by the BBC? What's going to happen with that? Kimberly, who would you like to see anchor the BBC's election coverage? Anybody that jumps to mind?
Someone much cooler and more fun. What about RuPaul?
RuPaul's election race would be certainly different. Jane?
Clive Myrie is actually my hero. Mm. I think he's super talented. I met him a few weeks ago in connection with Trick Awards, and he is, I think, one of the really solid and credible presenters with gravitas. He's also got a sense of humour, and he's adaptable as well, because he does that, you know, he can do a quiz show, he can read news, he can be in a war zone. Mm. You know, why wouldn't you have somebody like this who, you know, he's more relatable, I think, than perhaps the very serious, slightly older school kind of political reporters. I think he could, he's great. Love it.
Well, speaking of unflappable, excellent hosts, I'll be back with more and my guests after this.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kimberly and Jane are back with me for a deep dive into Kantar's reaction survey for 2023. Jane, give me a little background. What's the role, what's the job of this research?
The job of this research is to examine the question of the medium being the message. So we talk a lot in research and in advertising about the importance of good creative, you know, good ads, good content, whether it's influencer content or TV or audio advertising. We don't talk enough about the qualities of the media channels that they sit on and the media brands and what consumers think of those. Mm. So when we look at our media reaction study, we surveyed 16,000 consumers in 23 markets and also 900 marketers as well. But we asked them the questions about channels and brands, and we asked them to rate them on a number of dimensions, both positive and negative. So what do you think about advertising on this channel? And, you know, is it dull and boring? Is it fun and informative? Is it excessively frequent? Is it overly targeted? So we get all these positive and negative opinions, and then we can say which ones stack up better against the others. And we've done it, as I said, in 23 markets. And in those markets, we look at local brands as well as the global brands that are there. And then we ladder that up at a global level, both online and offline channels.
And does it shift market to market a lot?
Yes. In local markets, you often see that local publications come out either number one or number two, and some of the global ones are in there as well. But in terms of actual media channels, there is quite a lot of consistency around the world, you know, about what people think about events and TV and, you know, and digital channels as well. But as I said, you know, the interesting thing is there's massive divergence between what consumers think and what marketers think.
Yes. So we heard a bit about outdoor, but also online video
yes.
sort of remains the marketeer's darling, doesn't it?
Yes, and you know, that's, you know, in a way, I suppose it's like the sexy way of getting reach nowadays, because, you know, a lot of marketers' focus is on digital channels. They're still growing, even if it's at a slightly declining rate since last year. We also asked marketers what their planned spend intentions are by channel for 2024, and then we rate that as, like, you know, the net positives or the net negatives. And the top 10 stated channels by marketers for growth next year are all digital, including podcasts. You'll be
so
glad
what's,
to hear.
What's up there? What's at the top?
Well, the top is online video, as you said. But you've got things like influencer marketing in there, podcasts, social media channels, stories appear quite highly as well. Metaverse has gone down drastically since last year.
It's not had a good year.
No, metaverse is definitely not growing as fast as we think. You know, and there are other things that are happening as well, like, you know, TV has gone down in terms of its preference among marketers.
And is that because it's losing its sort of mass reach, or is it just not? Is it just a sexiness thing? It's just not quite sexy anymore.
It's a combination of things, and it's more about what is top of marketers' minds, I think, and what's top of marketers' minds appears to be a whole host of digital channels. And marketers are, whether we like it or not, attracted by new and shiny things as well. So right up there for marketers in terms of channels are YouTube, Google, Instagram, TikTok and Spotify. You know, among consumers, ironically, among the digital channels, they really like Amazon, advertising on Amazon. And the reason for that is because it's relevant. You know, it's targeted, right? Because Amazon obviously knows everything about you. So, you know, marketers, though, have got a lot to deal with. And it's not that TV is performing particularly badly. It's just that other channels are viewed positively slightly more.
And TV companies, of course, claim, well, they're in that world anyway with their own players. And
of course, and streaming.
SVOD and BVOD.
Yeah, and all of that is performing well. It's linear TV, which isn't right up there top of mind.
So whilst kind of consumers prefer Amazon ads and marketers quite like the old video streaming ads, consumers not a fan of video streaming ads, are they?
The consumers have difficulty with advertising generally. It's not something you say, oh, yes, I really want loads of advertising. Isn't it great? Yeah. So which is why when they look at, you know, consumer channels or all the offline ones that they can experience in real life, more immersive things. And it is exactly your point, Kimberly. It's to do with control. So digital ads, you know, I think they are getting better, but there's still quite a lot of pop-ups and sort of things you have to click an X on and, you know, get rid of. I think it's, you know, but having said that, you know, influencer advertising performs okay among consumers. So it's the newer format, and TikTok advertising is liked by them as well. So I think it's to do with the formats.
So Elon hasn't killed off social media yet then?
Well, X hasn't performed very well in this year in terms of the brand rankings. And
when was the field work for this?
It was April, May this year.
Okay.
So not very long ago. And so during the Elon period, and among advertisers, there seems to be a trust issue, and marketers next year aren't, you know, so enthusiastic about X. I still can't say it properly, but yeah.
Well, fingers crossed we won't have to talk about it for that much longer. In terms of audio, music streaming and podcasts are also growing, but radio's had a bit of a wobble.
Radio's had a bit of a wobble, much like many perhaps offline brands or brands that, you know, channels
heritage,
that are perceived to be offline. Audio generally is still liked, you know, and Spotify has performed well as well in the rankings. But among audio, podcasts are the thing that, you know, marketers want to spend more on next year. I think, you know, the evergreen challenge is not whether you do it or not, is how you do it, and then whether it's impactful. But what we do know is that if you advertise on those channels and those brands that consumers like and they have a preference for, the ads tend to perform better.
Okay.
So it's kind of in your interests as a marketer to understand what consumers think.
Interesting. Kimberly, when you're advertising jobs or you're reaching, you know, a group of people that want to hear about opportunities, is there a shift on where that kind of communications go, or where you find your clients, both ends, I suppose?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because certainly
a lot of people in the TV industry advertise their jobs, including us, from time to time on Facebook, okay, inside groups, but not paid ads. Mm. I think it's more about community for TV types. LinkedIn will always be a good place to advertise. It more so, I think, for creative people. I think LinkedIn is an incredibly exciting place to be talking and advertising, and people used to think it was dry and corporate and boring, and it really isn't that now. But I think the effectiveness of advertising comes down a lot to do with trust. I mean, a lot of that is what Jane is saying, her report talks about, and relevance, but it's also about expectations. I think podcasting advertising is kind of accepted because podcasts are still relatively new, and therefore it sort of just happened that you expect there to be adverts because there always has been. Whereas YouTube video streaming advertising is so annoying because it never used to be there, certainly not at the top, and now I've got to sit through two ads that I can't wait to press that skip ad button as soon as possible.
I mean, it is interesting, some of those platforms are changing. As a YouTube channel owner, I got an email from them this week saying, we're removing your ability to decide where the adverts go. And it's like, oh, we've learned you make more money if you leave it to us, and basically don't remove the things that we quite like here. I think there's also a bit of people's perceptions change as their own media consumption habits change too. So if you're much more comfortable living in LinkedIn, actually, then that as an advertising destination works for you a bit more now.
Again, it's a warm place to exist. I think it's about community and trust. So yeah, you're going to see it, you're going to accept it, you're going to take it at face value. Whereas if something's being served up to me just because, you know, I'm there at the time, then I won't like it. I'll react adversely to it.
And the I guess the, you know, one good example is that, you know, the ads have to tie in with the type of channel that it is. So if you look at something like TikTok, we've done loads of research which shows that, you know, the more you customize your ad to the channel and, you know, taking all the advantages of the technology, the music backgrounds, the editing techniques, all of that kind of thing, you make it fun and entertaining because that's what the channel is about. They are more impactful. So you're absolutely right. You have to kind of lean into what that channel is about and do it in the right way for your brand, but also for the consumers.
Well, the rise of digital audio and Spotify and the rise of digital advertising, particularly in Spotify, hasn't been ignored by criminals. And if you saw this week, so this is criminals in Sweden. Of course it would be Sweden, where Spotify comes from. They want to launder their money, and rather than follow Breaking Bad and opening a nail shop or something like that, what they've done is they've released music on Spotify, paid ne'er-do-wells to basically click play on all the streams, and then claim the cash back from Daniel Ek and Spotify, which is an amazing story. Spotify say that they don't think this is true, though some criminals said, no, we definitely do this.
It blew my mind when I read this story. I had to read it a couple of times to get my head around it. It's actually really complex. But obviously not fair play to criminals, but fair play to the creativity perhaps of criminals.
I mean, this is a group of people who definitely understand platforms, technologies and advertising.
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it is that it's kind of, you know, a few years ago we were talking about click farms, where people would just click on things to boost click rates. It's kind of click farms, you know, 2.0, I think we're experiencing here. And as Kimberly says, it's like a great idea for a crime. But, you know, a couple of the stories I read saying, you know, there is no evidence that it is happening. So it could be entirely fiction. Mm. Who knows?
There's been some other stories around Spotify, people putting white noise on there and taking the ad money from it, because obviously there's this big pool of cash that gets distributed in a variety of different ways that kind of annoys everybody. So if you can find an angle, find an edge, get some of that good .com cash in your pocket.
Honestly, I didn't even know you could make money from having streams on Spotify. I just use it to make my own like playlists for parties and stuff. So, you know, it's a whole new world to me.
Of course, music artists will complain that they're not paid enough for their streams. So there's a whole, you know, industry battle going on there about, you know, rightful reward for content.
Well, I look forward to like that Spotify have these sort of twice yearly, look at all the amazing things we're doing. I look forward to like the VP of of artist payment coming on while the criminals think it's pretty good split of the cash. Okay, there's just enough time for the media quiz. This week it's all about the National Television Awards. What normally happens is the media industry come up with a shortlist and then the public themselves, they get to vote for the winners. So just to keep everyone abreast of what the public think, I'm going to name the category and two shortlisted shows. You just have to tell me who won.
We think won or who we would have preferred to win.
No, who actually won. We talk about that afterwards.
Okay.
So buzz in with your name if you know the answer. So Jane, you'll say.
Jane.
And Kimberly, you'll say.
Kimberly.
Right, here we go. Question number one. Best daytime. Was it The Repair Shop or This Morning?
Kimberly, The Repair Shop.
It was The Repair Shop. They won at the expense of This Morning. Obviously had a few fireworks this year.
But also, who doesn't love The Repair Shop? The public got that one right.
It's a reassuring programme, isn't it? And it sort of makes you cry and, you know, what's not to like, really?
And it did mean we didn't have to put up with the dreadful we're all hungover on This Morning gag they do every year after the NTS.
Yeah, but they don't do that anymore, obviously.
Okay, question number two. The Bruce Forsyth Entertainment Awards, who won it, Anton Deck or Gogglebox?
Oh, Kimberly.
Oh, you just...
Go on then.
It was Gogglebox.
It was Gogglebox. They're celebrating 10 years this year. But don't feel too sorry for Anton Deck. They did come away with their 44th NTA award this year for Best Presenters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you feel about that, Jane?
I don't know. It's like, it's sort of relentless, the Anton Deck thing, isn't it, really? Yeah, it just sort of goes on and on, despite their own dramas, which they've had.
Who's the next Anton Deck? Surely there's another Anton.
Refresh required.
Gogglebox, worthy winner.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, I am slightly... bored of the photos of my peers and my friends who all work on Gogglebox and who I think are fantastic for the record, but wow, it's every year as well, it seems.
I went and saw a session at the Edinburgh TV Festival celebrating 10 years of Gogglebox. And I mean, it's still a massive ratings winner for Channel 4. They're sort of stuck with it.
It is. I remember I was working at Studio Lambert at the time the development team were coming up with it. And I was making a cup of tea in the kitchen. And one of the team, we were just doing the small talk over the kettle boiling. What are you working on, Kimberly? I'm on Undercover Boss here. What are you working on? Oh, we're doing this. I'm in development. Yeah, we're making this pitch deck about people who are watching TV. So we're filming the people who are watching the TV. And we were both like, okay, move on. And then look what happened.
They showed some great clips of the international Goggleboxes from around the world. And lovely to see equivalents everywhere. But it is a great way that it does... Unlike many shows, it does sort of reflect, I think, Britain.
Yes.
It really does.
Yes, and the characters that they choose, people become invested in. But also, it's kind of gentle humour as well. So it's a kind of, again, it's a kind of reassuring watch, isn't it? It feels familiar.
I used to think it was like a much more human version of the Anne Robinson points of view.
Yeah.
And more entertaining.
Yeah.
Right, question number three. Best comedy... Did it go to Ghosts, Ted Lasso, or Young Sheldon?
Oh, Kimberly. I want to go on, Jane. You had your hand up.
Yeah, no, because I was gonna say something, but I'm not sure about that. So you go.
I think
first.
I know what it is, but I know what it should have been.
Okay, who did win?
Is it Young Sheldon?
Yes, Young Sheldon did win.
I mean, Ted Lasso for the win, personally.
Well, I think I can just hear in the background Scott Bryan screaming about Ghosts because he was very annoyed that Ghosts didn't win. I mean, Young Sheldon, it's back to the public, have the public's taste, don't they?
Yeah, and, you know, full disclosure, I used to chair Trick Awards, Television Radio Industry Club, and I'm now still on the committee. And, you know, the public vote, if that's the route you go down, has to win, you know. And I guess there's a reach issue about, you know, who's going to vote, who can be bothered to vote, and
motivated groups enjoy voting in these things.
Yeah,
and how did they pick the public that vote? I mean, I don't know anybody who had that. Is it phone lines?
Online. So it's open to, obviously, the people who are nominated encourage their fans to vote for them. But obviously some have bigger social reaches or can reach out to different groups.
Yeah, I mean, in market research, obviously, we do research differently because you look at, you know, representative populations.
See, I'm all in for that.
Yeah,
that
you know,
fair.
Demographically weighted and all that kind of thing. But these awards, you know, can't be done like that. That's too complicated. So, you know, it's just how it is.
Well, congratulations, Kimberly. 3 out of 3.
Yeah. I failed.
As a prize, you get to lead the media podcast development slate for 2023-2024.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you to you both for joining us today. Where can people keep up with what you're doing? Kimberly.
Oh, so people can find me. I'm very active on LinkedIn and at talentedpeople.tv. And, of course, the Imposter Club podcast, which is on all the usual podcasts.
Wherever you're listening to this one. And Jane?
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn. Obviously, I'm active there as well. Kantar.com/media reactions is where you can download the booklet of the research that I was just talking about. We have a podcast as well called Future Proof, which is all about marketing and brands.
Thank you both. And that's it from us today at the London Podcast Studios. If you want to bump into us in the corridor on the way to your own recording, you can. Plus, you'll get 25% off your first booking when you use the code MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com. That's thelondonpodcaststudios.com. And use MEDIAPOD as the code for 25% off. My name is Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill. It was a Rethink Audio production. I'll see you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.